being trained by Bob Lee, who not only is doing the right things outwardly, like Elijah was saying and doing a lot of the right things, but his heart is actually right with God. He is actually one who is the real deal. And so we see in verse number 1 of chapter 14, so Elijah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the city of David. Asa, his son, reigned in his stead. And in his land, in his days, the king, the land was quiet 10 years. So for the first 10 years of Asa's reign, everything's peaceful. They're not having to deal with any warfare or problems of that nature. And it says, Asa did that which was good and right in his sight, and as the Lord his God pursued. In verse 3 it says, so he took away the altars of the strange gods in the high places, and broke down the images, and cut down the groves. Now this is what is expected of a godly king in the Old Testament. It's not enough to win the man's wife or speak to the God. The man is supposed to actually ensure, and the people in general, they're supposed to ensure that other false religions literally do not exist in the land. If you go back into the Mosaic Law and read up in books like Deuteronomy, you will see that they were not supposed to tolerate any of the cities or towns of Israel to worship other gods. Now, some people will mistakenly believe that this should also be the case in the New Testament. And they would look at that and say, well, we shouldn't tolerate other religions either. We should either destroy all the idols or destroy all the, you know, Mormon churches. Oh, maybe it's not a bad idea now that I think about it. No, letter of praise of God given to God. And so, in the Old Testament, however, there was a physical, literal nation of Israel that were the chosen people of God. Why is this? Because if you study the Bible, you'll find that God is trying different things, if you will, in a lifted guy robe. He's trying different things throughout history, and none of them really work out. And what he's doing is he's showing us our need for Christ. He's showing us the failure of humanity without Jesus Christ. Okay? And so, you know, he starts out, and he basically, you know, has Adam and Eve in the garden, and then obviously that's a failure, right? Because they sin, and they get kicked out of the garden. And then, basically, you know, he continues to work with humanity, but then the whole earth is filled with violence, and he ends up having to flood and destroy and start over. So then, basically, the next thing he tries to do, well, I'm just going to take this one righteous man and just kill everyone else. And we're just going to put this one righteous man over in his family on the ark. And that's Noah, of course. And then, you know, and then so then we start over with Noah. Well, that didn't work. Because as soon as Noah gets off the ark, you know, it gets drunk. And then his son recovered. And then, you know, 100 years later, he got the Tower of Babel. And they worshiped Satan. And then, you know, well, that's what happens. Then God tries something else. He says, okay, well, I'm just going to pick Abraham. And he is going to be the father of this nation that's going to be like a chosen people, special nation, that's going to basically be like an example nation to the rest of the world. I'm going to work with this nation. And so that ultimately becomes the nation of Israel, right? He starts out with the nation of Israel, tries the system of the judges. You know, that ultimately collapses. Then you have the monarchy with King Saul. That doesn't work out. Then he's like, okay, well, I'm going to take the Maranatha now and run it. Goes back to the Davidic monarchy. Then again, the next generation, it goes south. Next, he says, okay, well, then, you know, we're going to cut this in half. And then, you know, we still have the southern kingdom, just the righteous kingdom, the sect, and then, you know, cut away with the northern kingdom. Time after time, humans fail, people sin, it doesn't really work out. But this was the program in the Old Testament. And then, of course, the New Testament comes around. Jesus Christ comes. He dies on the cross. He's buried. He rises again. And then he institutes the New Testament church, which is forever, which is eternal. There's no mean thing. There's no, you know, Book of Mormon is come and bring the New Testament to you. This is the final testament. Now, okay, so Old Testament, New Testament. Okay. Both, right? Christ has been glorified in the church, the glory of the family, and the dominion. And so, but, you know, right now, the New Testament, Christ is the final message. Obviously, I know Peter Coat Adams knows this stuff. I'm the guy who's writing about that, right? But let's all see the New Testament. There's no testament to include the Bible with, right? The New Testament, that's it. And the reason that I'm emphasizing all this is because the Old Testament nation of Israel, in order for this to work, they have to actually worship the Lord. What good is it to say, like, okay, we're going to have this one nation that worships the Lord, these other nations are kind of left to their own devices, we're going to have this one nation that worships the Lord, and they're like an example, they're like a pattern, they're like a lighthouse to the rest of the world, they're like a city on a hill. That's only going to work if they're actually worshiping the Lord. Which is why, in the Mosaic Law, the nation of Israel must worship the Lord. Does everybody understand what I'm saying? They have to worship the Lord. And remember, God, when he brings them into the promised land, he makes them commit to this. And Joshua says, look, are you going to worship the Lord or not? And he's even trying to talk them out of it. I don't think you guys can do it. I don't think you're going to worship the Lord. No, man, we're going to worship the Lord. Look how they made a covenant. They made a commitment. We are going to be the Lord's people. Okay? This is mandatory. So if someone wants to worship some other false god, they leave or die. This is how the Old Testament nation of Israel worked. Or at least that's the way it was supposed to work. Now, obviously, they didn't follow this. They screwed it up. They know it's going to really fall apart. And the Bible says, if that first covenant, remember what the covenant is testament, if that first covenant had been faultless, then there should no place have been found for the second. But finding fault with them, and then, you know, it goes on to explain the nature of the new covenant. Okay.
horrible idea.
I know you're having fun, you know this idea.
It's a horrible idea, and here's why it's a horrible idea. Because you know what I've instead done? I've just filled every church with unbelievers. Because just because I make a law, hey, everybody has to be Covenant Baptist, everybody watch this 10-minute video on Bible 11, okay, pray that prayer, all right, we're all on the same page now, this is our religion. That doesn't magically make people good Protestants. That's a decision that they have to make. And the problem with just saying, well, we're just going to make it all Christian, is that now they just cannot say Covenant Baptist. If they do that, then, you know, 80% or 90% of people in the church will be unsaved. Not necessarily paralyzed and saved, but still coming after preaching and witnessing and God of their fathers, and to do the law and to keep it. Also to the honorable things and to the high places, lineages, and kings, right? God blessed him in the tents of the Judean because he has done what he's supposed to do by destroying Isaiah. That's what he said. Okay, blessed be the King of Judah. Verse 6, he built famous cities in Judah for the Lord had rest. So he tells us their warfare, and he can really focus on building projects and improving their infrastructure, defenses, and walls, defenses. He had no war in those years because the Lord had given them rest. By the way, here's the best formula for having peace. It's not necessarily just having a mighty government. It's more important is being righteous at God. You know, if I want to be safe in my house, yeah, I could put up all kinds of safeguards and bars and fences and alarms and watchdogs and have a bunch of loaded weapons and everything. But at the end of the day, safety is of the Lord. And the way that I can tell you the safest thing to have is knowing that a mighty God, knowing that God's blessing, that's going to make me feel way safer than having all of these fancy things. In the United States of America, obviously we have a fall in the confidence in the Lord. And that to me makes us feel pretty safe. You know, we're not afraid that the Russians are going to come and invade us. The Chinese are going to come and invade, you know. The Earth is mad at them. This is mad for them. And just know that we have that fall in the confidence in the Lord. By the way, we're well kingdom. Like, God's still working. Okay, so it's that. But, at the same time, though, if God's not for you, you could be as powerful as all get out, and you could still lose. Because at the end of the day, God is the one that gives rest. God's the one that gives us peace. If you want to have those things, you got to make sure that you're right with God. The best thing you can do for national security is not like, hey, we got to make sure that we get those politicians that are going to protect us. No, the best thing you want to do for national security is to be godly. To preach godly to saved people. To get people saved and teach them the way of Christianity. That's doing more to save America and protect America than any military action. And, you know, we got to secure the border. We got to do all these things. You know, at the end of the day, though, God blessing us is the most secure thing. That's the only thing. So it says that in verse 7, your foe in the sons of Judah, they have plagued your cities, and they cannot do well. So the towers, gates, and bars, all now they get before us. Because we have sought the Lord our God, we have sought him, and he has given us rest on every side. So they build our castles. Here's the way he gets it. He's giving God the glory. You know, we were going places before. Things were going really great for him, and when things went really well, and he was really strong and really secure, then it's just like, just blew all the way up. This is not looking at us. So Asa is saying, hey guys, everything's great because the Lord is serving the world. And so let's keep doing what we're doing so that God keeps blessing us. It's like going so great is the only way to become great. You know, you become great because you're serving God, and then all of a sudden you get all puffed up and high and mighty, and you're just living in it. No, be like Asa where you say, no, God is blessing my kids. Right? The reason I'm prospering, the reason I have money, the reason I'm healthy, the reason that my relationships are going good is God's blessing. That's the attitude here. So, hey, we better keep serving God so that we can keep on being blessed. Instead of just thinking, oh, well, I don't need the Lord. I'm good. I have him set up in my bank account. I'm good still. My plan with that is just because I'm the one that's blessing. Let's sell out to different religions. So Asa gets it. Asa, verse 8, had an army of men with gold targets and spears out of Judah, 300,000, and out of Benjamin with gold shields and deer bows, 4,000 of these mighty men. Wow, the man does have a great army, right? He's got 580,000 troops. So he's not just leaving the door unlocked and just having no safeguards. Well, God's going to protect me, so I don't need a gun. He still has the gun. He still locked the door. But he's saying, hey, faith is God's protection. Your peace is God's blessing. Doesn't mean you're not going to go to the shack. But the battle you're going to is God's blessing. So
building a business and you're destroying my business. And obviously that was tough at the time. But then looking back, I'm like, I'm glad my business was destroyed because now I'm passing through time. And at the time, that was a tough decision to make because back in those days, the kids was getting money like a champ. 85 kids were getting paid. So it was kind of like it was borderline the level of a church, you know, like have enough money to pay a salary because it was like that. It was just borderline. Whereas now, obviously, you know, you make too much money to not get paid. So you make a difference in salaries. Back then, it was a little bit of a, you know, second chance. It was like, but it was like, you know, God kind of forced my hand by allowing that those events to happen. And so, you know, the point is that when bad things happen in our life, at the time, we're stressed out, we're up at night, worried, nervous, upset, and this happens to all of us all the time. You know, it may happen to us or someone else. Relationship problems, money problems, job problems, business issues, you name it, whatever. But I'm telling you, like, they really don't make you. Because God's got our back, you know, and thank you for that. I was all stressed out back then, but I didn't want you to be stressed out. The Bible says, be careful for nothing. But in everything, by prayer and supplication, let your request be made known unto God, and the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall keep your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Now, I shouldn't just go, obviously, I should have known it's not my birthday, but I should have just been going to bed every night and sleeping like a baby and just say, hey, I'm blessed. Persecution's a blessing. God's got my back. This is more reward than ever. I mean, God said, blessed are ye when men shall persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. Rejoice in that day and weep for joy. Great is your reward in heaven. You know, I should have just quoted that and zipped bud, you know. But I'm human, so I was worried and stressed out, but did I really need to be? No, because God had a love, you know, actually turned out better than I had thought. God knew better for me what I should do and how I should live and what happened to me. Because God orchestrated those events. But other people were doing evil. He took the evil and turned it into good. I don't believe that God is obviously, of course I don't believe that God is controlling evil people. You know, evil, sick people, they do it in their own way. But God can manipulate circumstances and take your evil and turn it around into good. You know, the Ethiopians, you know, are coming and invading Judah. That's a bad thing. But at the end of the day, Judah ends up more blessed and more blessed than it could have ever happened. I'm sure that, you know, it was difficult at the time, but looking back, he's like, pretty blessed by God for that. And the same holds true for our lives. We have the promise. I think about this verse probably every minute of my life. I mean, I go through a lot of times, and I'm thinking about this verse every day, maybe day to day, because I'm constantly thinking about it. It's like how I live my life.